to your hosts on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today has been a social and political activist since 1968. A Native American, for him, everything in the world is seen as spiritual and sacred. He's come to a clear, provable understanding. We have been born into a prison of belief systems and trained, much like lab rats are managed, to follow the agenda of others. We have been dumbed down and brought into line to be mindless consumers of useless material goods and services which profit the ruling class of our nation. I thought these observations were worthy of further exploration and that he would have a distinctive point of view on issues confronting us today, including the current election. I'm pleased to welcome E.J. Doyle to the show. E.J., welcome.
Thank you very much, Jim. How are you doing today?
Just fine. I'm so pleased to have you on. Before we get further into your personal philosophy and so forth, I'd like to ask you about some observations that have been made about the two candidates and as a kind of measure of the extent to which racism is involved here. I want your reaction to the following questions. What if the Obamas had paraded five children across the stage, including a three-month-old infant and an unwed pregnant teenage daughter?
I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. I've stayed away from watching anything regarding the election. I personally believe that the both sides of the election, here's how I can put it. A Native American elder told me years ago that the Democrats and Republicans are two wings of the same bird. And I pretty much have lived on that philosophy, that the choice we're given is the choice of two evils as opposed to two good things. The best candidate to be running right now would have been a Ron Paul and what's her name, the woman from Georgia who was running the
Cynthia McKinney.
Right, Cynthia McKinney. That would have been the most ideal thing. So right now I've stayed away. I don't watch the news. I don't watch any of that falderall that's going on with Obama and McCain.
Well, the point being made here is you have this Sarah Palin, you see, who has five kids, including a three-month-old infant, whom I actually suspect is her daughter's child, and she is presented as, you know, the teenage daughter is appears to be pregnant. Wow. And, you know, if this were a black family, this would be massively held against them, and yet because it's a white family, it isn't. It seems to me during your lifetime, you must have experienced a lot of subtle kinds of racism, and therefore I thought you might have a sense of this, but since you're, you know, paying no attention to the campaign, maybe that's a wrong assumption on my part.
Well, it does mean I'm not paying attention to what humans are about, and we're very racist in this country. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, back in 1971 or two, I was working in a hospital in Martinez, California, and I was dating an African-American woman. And, you know, at that time, you know, we got called the N-word a lot, you know, what are you doing with the N, and blah, blah, blah. And you know, we'd go out together, and she had a son who had a young child. And so we had taken it with us, so a lot of people thought it was our child. And so we'd be at a park playing, you know, with the child and on the lawn and stuff and get these real hateful stares coming from people. So, yeah, we've been racist. There's no doubt about it, you know, and you know, it's being manipulated. Everything's being manipulated for our emotions, you know.
Yeah. I'll give you a few more examples in my take on them, and then you can respond as you think appropriate.
Sure.
What if John McCain was a former president of Harvard Law Review? See, everyone would be raving about how brilliant he is. Now, here Barack Obama actually is a former president of Harvard Law Review, but it gets kind of suppressed and lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, well, according to Tarpley and some of the other people, though, they're talking about, they can't even find people at Columbia who even knew Obama, you know, supposed fellow classmates, and there's nobody there who can identify, yeah, I went to class with him, or we, you know, we lunched together or anything, you know. So, and Tarpley thinks that this is where his Brzezinski connection came in, where Rockefeller and Brzezinski made the connection.
Well, it's interesting that you've been following Webster. I happen to think he's gone off the deep end on this Obama-Brzezinski business, and that there's that Obama doesn't represent anything like the threat to world peace that Webster would have us believe.
Well, right. I don't know if he does or not. I follow all of you a little bit on GCN. I get a little Alex Jones and you and, KW on the Armchair Survivalist gives the most practical information about how to survive if this world economy goes down. But I listen to everybody, and I sort of let it filter through me. And,
uh-huh.
and what he, and, you know, I don't think that he would be lying about the fact that they can't find anybody.
Well, I was a graduate student at Columbia
yeah.
for a year myself in 1968-69.
Uh-huh. There's a lot of isolation there?
Pardon me?
Would there be a lot of isolation from other students there?
You could pass through Columbia and hardly have interaction with anyone. I mean, it's
yeah.
not, you know, I don't think that necessarily means a whole lot. And,
right.
I'm just sorry that, you know, Webster, to me, he seems to have an axe to grind here, so I find it difficult to take him seriously on these topics, speaking for myself.
Sure, yeah, and I listen to you a lot also, and, you know, like, everybody has their different agendas. Right now, for me, I see there's too much ego and squabbling going on in the truth movement. It's like everyone wants to be a star or a leader rather than just help achieve a mutual goal.
Go with that, EJ. Tell us more about it.
Well, a lot of people have conversion agendas. You know, you get on, you listen to Alex Jones, and he does a lot of God bless this, and he talks about all the violent stuff that's going on and scary stuff that's going on. And then you listen to Michael Rivero, and he's, you know, in Hawaii there saying, well, you know, things are okay here. You know, everybody sort of has this different agenda. And it seems like people want to be stars. They don't want to be just really active. I like the idea of the, what do they call that movement of the activists that go and they confront people with microphones and cameras and stuff like that.
Not student scholars for 9/11 truth. They're a pretty good group about that.
No, these are the truth guys that get on the street and do it.
We Are Change?
We Are Change, right. We Are Change is a really wonderful movement of people across. I mean, this is where the real activism is happening, I think. But it just seems like egos get involved. You know, everybody has been taught in our culture that everybody wants to be a rock star, everybody wants to be a star, everybody wants to be, you know, it's like it's sexy to have, you know, information. Well, yeah, you know, they can talk about things and say, you know, thermite this and thermite that and, you know, and it's, you know what I mean? And nobody's really getting out there and just confronting these people, you know.
You're looking at it from an activist perspective, of course. You know, my background as a philosopher of science has led me to emphasize the importance of considering all of the evidence in relation to all of the possible explanations so that we can't just rule some out because we don't like them on personal or psychological or
You're absolutely
political,
right.
political
You're
grounds.
Absolutely right, Jim. But it's really obvious we live in a world of hype. Over-exaggeration, lies. Every day we're slammed with high-level psychological marketing techniques that have been based on all these years of human, behavior research. From my perspective, I've learned that our society works on an agenda of separation. You know, it's predicated on the idea, our society is predicated on the idea that technological progress is going to equal financial growth, eventually leading to, you know, world domination.
Stand by, EJ. We'll be right back with my special guest, EJ Doyle. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays. My special guest today, EJ Doyle, has been a social and political activist since 1968. He's become convinced that we've been born into a prison of belief systems and trained much like lab rats or managed to follow the agendas of others. We've been dumbed down and brought into line to be mindless consumers of useless material goods and services which profit the ruling class of our nation. EJ, I think you write very well, and you have, you know, crystallized important thoughts in those words.
Thank you very much. For me, I've been one of those right brain strong persons, left brain weak. So it was like the good and bad news. I was gifted with the vision to see, but unable to articulate well enough, you know, to be heard.
Well, you articulated pretty well, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I guess I just didn't sell myself. I wanted to get back to that point I was making before the break, just a second here. I was talking about the fact that our society works on an agenda of separation. It's not based on social progress from personal growth to achieve world cooperation. It's more about selfish kind of behavior by our society. And so most people aren't even in a real world consciousness. They exist in this pop culture world of pretend, you know, and I think the key to all this is that we've lost our authenticity in our daily lives. You know, we've been lied to so much by so many different people in so many different ways that we don't even trust ourselves anymore, you know. And I think it's that Hegelian thing that's been going on. For those who don't know, George Hegel was a philosopher in the 19th century, and he built this thesis that the thesis, the antithesis, results in a synthesis, which is essential to bring about change, and that's all about conflict management. And so when you're asking me earlier about Barack Obama, that's all conflict management. They want us to argue, oh, he's racist, and so-and-so is this, and so-and-so is that. And they get us arguing like the puppet master does, you know, watching your right hand, and you don't see what the left hand is doing. And they've been doing this for a long time, you know, this violent clash of opposites, you know, and then they bring about their own synthesis of what they really wanted. And I know this, your network is filled with a lot of religious people, or, you know, not necessarily spiritual, but religious people who are Christian based and talk about God a lot. But my feelings are, is that this whole idea about worshiping a God, and especially Christianity, is one of the most dangerous things that has hit this world. You know, here's my point, and this is why I don't trust Christians, and I don't trust, you know, other religions in general. I'll give you four real quick, if I can remember them.
Take your time. This is fascinating.
Okay. 2 Timothy says, all scripture is inspired by God. So that means the whole book is God's book. And then Luke, I think it's Luke 16 or something, says, all the vicious Old Testament laws will be binding forever. And you've heard many people say, oh, well, that was the Old Testament. We're talking about the New Testament now. No, the book says all, you know, is worked by God, and it's all the vicious stuff is, you know, binding forever. So then Matthew comes along talking for the mythical Jesus and says, Jesus says, do not think that I have come to abolish, you know, the law or the prophets. And then the final one is, I think, Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy says, kill any friends or family that worship a God that is different than your own. So if you put this all together, basically the Bible is a permanent work of God, backed up by the mythical Christ. It's forever binding, and if you don't believe in it, they can kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that all warm and fuzzy?
Some of the other purported moral maxims you find in, say, Leviticus and Deuteronomy include that children who curse their parents should be not given time out, not sent to their room, not grounded for 2 weeks, but put to death.
Right.
Similarly, for spiritualists or mediums among you, they should be put to death. Similar for adulterers, they should be put to death. I mean, these seem like somewhat severe penalties for human indiscretion.
Absolutely. I think it was and I know a lot about the Bible because I studied it. I wanted to find out, you know, these people control the world. I want to find out what's going on. I think it was in Peter, 2 Peter or something like that. The mythical Jesus is criticized by the Pharisees, you know, because he didn't wash his hands before eating. And so he defends himself by attacking them for not killing the disobedient children according to the commandments. Absolutely what you were talking about. You know, I mean, it's like...
Oh. It is fairly stunning, isn't it?
It's an amazing kind of realization when you pull away all the emotions. If you take away all the emotions, just look at what these books are about. They're all about... One of the things is, of course, who was it... there was a great quote by about women, and it says, since the beginning, what was it, Susan B. Anthony. Susan B. Anthony said, by law and public sentiment and religion, ever since Moses, you know, down to the present day, that women have been thought of as only a piece of property to be disposed of at the will and pleasure of men. You know, this is what comes out of these books, whether it's Muslim, or whether it's Jewish, or whether it's Christian, you know. Kick butt on the women and the children, and the men are in charge, you know. So let me sort of give you a segue. My feeling is about tribal stuff. I've written a book called The Urban Shaman, and I sent you some stuff, clippings from that and things. And the tribal or goddess-based cultures the world over, they had some very close similarities prior to the influence of the fear-mongering church came around. You know? They all had a reverence for the earth. They saw prime creator and spirit in everything, you know. God wasn't located in some far-off Valhalla or heaven waiting to punish you. They learned to work with the sound, smoke, minerals, crystals, and all the other gifts. They saw these and the sacred teacher plants, a mescaline pot and other things like that. They learned how to use these things and be autonomous with their spiritual expression. Well, you can't make money off of that. You know, you can't put fear into them, you know, if they're believing in nature, you have to put fear into them. And so, I was listening to Michio Kaku the other day. He was on the radio, and he was talking about how he went to the opposite direction of his friends, and he wanted to find out about the Big Bang Theory as opposed to making things blow up. He wanted to find out about the Big Bang Theory, you know. Well, I had a kind of a similar kind of thing. My concern was, for thousands of years, we lived in relative peace. You know, funereal evidence for people out there is the grave. When they dig up graves, this stuff has been buried for thousands and thousands of years. Nobody's touched it. So if you find a hero's grave, you know, with swords and armor and all that stuff, you've got an idea what's going on in the culture. Well, for thousands of years, none of that was found. No frescoes had paintings of war heroes and stories like that. They didn't even have short swords, you know. They lived in peace for thousands of years. They saw spirit as a feminine, not a female principle. And it was nurturing and it was an energy source. And then all of a sudden, we'll get back.
DJ, we'll be right back with my special guest, DJ Doyle. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. On the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, E.J. Doyle, has a very distinctive point of view, and I'm certainly enjoying listening to him discuss it. He's been a social activist since 1968. He's, as a Native American, he sees everything in the world as spiritual and sacred. E.J., I really find everything you're saying extremely interesting.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's a, really a pleasure to be talking with you. I've listened to you for a long time. I wanted to interject something before I finish my point. During the break, there was an advertisement for the Bible and about the Antichrist. And one of the things I do when I'm online at like a YouTube and places like that, and they're talking about this thing. I ask a simple question to all the Christians out there. You know, since there was no Christ, how can there be an Antichrist? You know what I mean? So what are people worried about? You know, Constantine made this story up. It was a 1,000-year-old story when he got it, you know, and long before Zeitgeist came out, people like myself and others had already researched all this and knew that there was no information anywhere outside of the Bible about Jesus and Mary and apostles and all that kind of stuff. And at the time, the Romans, of course, had lots of reporters. They had a lot of historians, you know, going about, and they were really good at keeping records. And, you know, so it's just kind of funny. You know, you talk about an Antichrist and...
So you challenge the existence of the historical Jesus.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so obvious. Anyway, what I wanted to get back to is that my point was that for thousands of years we had this, people were living in relative peace, you know, with the feminine spirit of God. It wasn't like I said, they didn't worship women. They worshiped the feminine nurturing energy source. And then... it's a ceaseless onslaught of murder started, this mayhem, this madness, you know, by men, and they eradicated most of the earth-based spirituality, you know, and they replaced it with the male-run church state, you know, who worshiped this vindictive, male, off-planet, warmongering God. I mean, what was one, I can't remember which quote it was, but it says, fear God because it says he is a jealous God and his name is jealous, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Who would make this up? I mean, if you were like the creator of all the universe, you know, everything out there, you just could make anything you want. You know, are you going to worry about whether somebody here on this little planet didn't love you and didn't worship you? You know, no. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous, you know. I mean, and the thought about how many different gods are out there, I mean,
yes.
Cultures across the world, they had Baal and Danu and Ram and Shiva and Hera and Ahura, you know what I mean? All the different names of God out there that people saw things as.
And Yahweh and Zeus and...
Yeah, it was just, you know, a tremendous amount. But what it was is that these, somewhere along the way, and the history that I read was that when the Kurgans came down out of South Russia, Kurgan was the name of the burial plot. And so they named these groups after the name, the way they buried themselves, you know. And the Kurgans came down, and they had been living in the mountainous regions where it was harsh living, you know, lightning and thunder and rain and cold and all that kind of stuff. And the only things attributed to them were the short sword and they tamed horses. So they came in, and they came down through Europe. And they started killing everybody because all these people had been living in the valleys where it was fertile and, you know, the alluvial soil would, you could go plant anything you want when the floods would come. And after they were gone, it would leave all this, you know, mineral-rich soil there and you could plant stuff. So people were living, you know, near the rivers and in valleys and stuff. And the Kurgans come down and just start kicking butt everywhere, you know, because these people didn't have swords. They weren't built on castles on mountaintops with moats and stuff. So... like I was saying about Mishu, when he was looking for the Big Bang, I'm trying to wondering what Big Bang caused that. You know, I've looked at all sorts of different observations. I've talked to elders. I've talked to people who were into, like Barbara Marciniak talks about channeling the Palladian energy from an off-planet source, from the Pleiades, the star cluster up there. And they say that, you know, in a similar vein of David Icke, who talks about reptilians. And they say that a reptilian race had came here and seeded the planet, went back to their home base, got crazy, came back and took over the whole show, and they detuned us. And it's what the scientists now call junk DNA. The Palladians say that junk DNA is actually our ability to live for 200-300 years, to grow limbs back, to do all these magical things. So everybody has a different angle. It's like a lot of people offer to it, you know, but this off-planet stuff is really scary to others. You know, they go, oh, my God, you're a tinfoil hat wearer or something like that. But I'm going, look, you know, millions of people have seen spaceships, you know, or UFOs, whatever you want to call them. Nobody has seen God. Nobody has seen Jesus. Nobody has seen any of that kind of stuff. But millions of people who speak hundreds of different languages all around the world report the same kind of stuff. So there's something to it. I don't know exactly what, but there's something going on there, you know. Here's what I was looking for, a quote I had by a guy named Tatanamani. He's known as Walking Buffalo of the Stonies. This is in regards to worshiping. He said he was talking to some generals or some military people, and he said, "You didn't try to understand our prayers. When we sang our praises to the sun or moon or wind, you said we were worshiping idols. Without understanding, you condemned us as lost souls just because our form of worship was different than yours. We saw great spirits work in almost everything. Sun, moon, trees, wind, and mountains. Sometimes we approached them through these things. Was that so bad?" You know, and that was 200 years ago, a man talking like that. You know, people think that nowadays, you know, we're all modern and we're intelligent. But, you know, people have been smart for a long time.
You seem to me to have had a keen interest in anthropology or cultural differences and varieties.
Well, I'll tell you, Jim, I'm a reader. I love reading stuff. In 1968, I kind of started waking up then. And I was working at a San Francisco bookstore called Stacy's. It was the largest, at that time, largest paperback bookstore on the coast. And I started reading everything I could get my hands on, Camus and Ouspensky and that Jesuit, Chardin.
Deschardin, yeah.
Yeah, Deschardin. Churchward stuff on Mu, Stormer stuff on None Dare Call It Treason. I started reading everything I could. I don't know what it was. It was just like ever since I was a little kid, I've always had this hunger for knowledge, and so I started putting those things together. And let me tell you a quick story about what happened, that how the thread works in our lives. When I was working at that bookstore, one Saturday, my wife and I, after work, went over to a fellow worker's house, and we were sitting around smoking hemp and talking with him and his wife, and on the TV was this, he had a black and white TV, of course, and were four Indians. They were sitting on, very stoic, sitting on four bridge chairs on a set, and this announcer was saying, "Do you hear what these people are talking about? Do you know?" Well, turned out these were four Native Americans, elders, who started in 1949, petitioning the UN to talk there and all over, and they were talking about a specific drawing, an ancient drawing on stone. And this drawing depicted what would be called the end of the world. It depicted World War I and II. It had, and what they talked about was called a gourd of ashes. Everything was going to end up in a gourd of ashes. That was their way. So 12 years later, I'm working for KPFA Radio, that summer in 1980 was called the Summer Survival. There were events happening all over the United States going on there. And I was involved with the Long Walk for Survival. I was working with Dennis Banks, who was a Native American leader, John Trudell, a brilliant poet and activist. Okay.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, E.J. Doyle. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. The Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is a Native American, E.J. Doyle, who has a lot of interesting observations about society and life and the place of man in the world. E.J., I really invite you to continue your discussion.
Yeah, one thing, I didn't hear you on your original intro. I'm not Native American, but I've worked with them and lived with them for a lot. But I'm not an Irish.
You know, I wondered that because
Irish Italian.
Having learned from the elders, and I just made the inference. But I understand. I mean, you've absorbed so much of their culture.
Well, people often have asked me throughout my life if I was. I have high cheekbones. I kind of look a little like a Sioux, if you know what Sioux Indians look like. They have that kind of higher cheekbone look. But I wanted to get back. I keep getting back. It's like the rest of the story. I wanted to get back to what I was saying about this thread, how in people's lives, how you can follow threads of your life when you live long enough. You have plenty of threads. But I was working as a reporter for KPFA. Out of Berkeley. That was Pacifica Radio, the first nonprofit radio station. And so I worked with these people on the Long Walk for Survival. And after we got, I did promos for them and got it together, the meetings, and sat around with these people, and we plotted things out. Then after they left, I made a documentary, which I had sent you a copy of, and about the event. And then in July, I sold my Volkswagen. I had this really beautiful little Sunroof Volkswagen. I sold it to pay for a trip, because we didn't really get much money at all at the station. And I went to a gathering in South Dakota, and eventually about 15,000 people showed up there. It was held on a sheep farmer's land near Ellsworth Air Force Base. It's about 5 miles east of Rapid City. And we were there to kind of share and learn and see what was happening in the world. And so for 2 weeks, we got to have all these classes, and we built these shelters out in the hot sun, these, like, little teepee things. And I met Michio Kaku there and had some good conversations with him. Holly Sklar was there, and she had just had that her book on trilateralism and elite planning. And so it was just turning into a big hit. So she had some incredible information to share with us. We learned about things like inline harmonic amplification. Ooh, what's that? Well, that was when you would hang up your phone when you had the old wall phones, the landlines. They could listen through your mouthpiece still. They had this, they could put a, I don't know what it was called exactly, but it was like a rider that went through and kept your mouthpiece hot. So after that, whenever we'd have meetings and stuff, we'd unplug our phones in the walls just so we wouldn't be listened to. So it was a brilliant, it was a great meeting. So one day I come by the elders, and I was able to go hang out with the Indians there because I was a reporter and I had all this, Indian credentials, And I asked this elder, I says, I bent down and I was drawing in the ground. I says, I saw this drawing, 12 years ago and da-da-da. And he reached over and he scratched it away and he says, that was me. And his name was Thomas Baniaka, and he was a Hopi. And I went, what? And he said, yeah. So we smoked the pipe together, and he talked about it. And then later he gave some classes, and he talked about what was going on in the world right now was predicted, and even the Great Gathering was predicted by Black Elk. Everybody's heard of Black Elk Speaks. Well, that meeting, the gathering we had there was predicted by Black Elk. And if anybody wants to find out about that prediction, you can go to crystallinks.com. There's only one L, so the L in crystal is also the L in links, crystallinks.com, and you can get the information. And essentially, it's if people don't go back to being closer to the earth and get away from technology, they're going to end up in a gourd of ashes. And that was that. The Indians were talking about this hundreds of years ago. What did they know about microwaves? What did they know about nuclear bombs and stuff? They didn't know any of that, but they had visions, In fact, when I was talking earlier about off-planet connections, the name Cherokee was given by the people on either side of them, the other Native Americans. It meant, in their language, Cherokee meant those who don't speak our language. And the Cherokee themselves align themselves up with the Pleiades. They align themselves up with they talk about their grandfathers coming from off the planet. So, there's so much more to this story. And my concern is that everybody's focusing on what the New World Order people want. Just because they believe in devils and Satan and all that other kind of stuff doesn't make it real. I mean, if I come up and slap you in the mouth because I believe in Satan, it doesn't mean that Satan made me do it. It's just my stupid belief system made me do it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So what I'm trying to get out to people, and I've tried all my life, is have autonomy. Have sovereignty in your life. Don't let other people set your agenda of how you should, celebrate this incredible gift we have. You know, ironically, you played the Beatles a lot in the program, you know, and last week I saw this movie that called Across the Universe. Are you familiar with it?
No.
It's an incredibly great movie. It's all Beatles songs sung by the participants of the movie. In other words, all the actors in there will sing a song at different points in the movie. And it's a period piece, so it's taking place in the 60s. A guy from England and a guy from the United States are going together in school, and during their break, they go back to the rich guy's house in New England area, and the movie takes place from there. Well, at one point, I just started crying. Now, you know, I'm a manly man, you know what I mean? But I, you know, I have that side of me that can be
sure.
sensitive, you know? And I just started crying uncontrollably, and I realized it was the loss we had, the loss of hope.
Yeah. Know,
the Beatles represented a time of hope. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Those who are, you know, under 30 do not understand what it was like to march together with 100,000 people and see a war stop because of all the protestations, you know, to see people working together, blacks and whites working together, food banks, giving away stuff, you know, working together as truly without any kind of agenda other than trying to make everything great for everybody. You know, and it's not that way anymore. And so I just got really sad. It was like, you know, we lost a lot of hope. But, you know, there's still hope now. We can't be down on ourselves just because it's not the Beatle time anymore. You know, we have to, you know, get together. And at the end of the show, I'm going to talk about my 10% solution I talked about. And it'll include that. But I don't want to talk about it right now. I'd rather chat about some other things. The way they kill us off. One of the early books that I read was called The Rockefeller File by Gary Allen. Are you familiar with that?
No, go for it.
It came out in 1975. And essentially he told about all the trust they had, how they took over the railroads, how they, you know, Rockefellers, you know, just killed and stomped on everybody to get their, you know, their money. Larry McDonald, who was a conservative Democrat, from Georgia. He did the, in fact, he was George Patton's cousin. And he did the intro. And here it is. I just found it. Here's the intro to what he said. He said, "The drive of the Rockefellers and their allies is to create a one-world government, combining supercapitalism and communism under the same tent, all under their control. Do I mean conspiracy? Yes, I do. I'm convinced there's such a plot, international in scope, generations old in planning, and incredibly evil in intent." Now, as old Harvey, what's his name, would say, now the rest of the story. He was killed. Yeah, Paul Harvey, yeah. He was killed because he was on Korean Airlines Flight 747. And
007.
Yeah. What was that?
It was 007.
007, yeah. 747 was the airplane.
Yeah.
He was killed on that airplane. It took
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, E.J. Doyle. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. Continuing my conversation with my special guest, E.J. Doyle, who has a very Native American outlook on life, including that for him, everything in the world is seen as spiritual and sacred. He's been a political and social activist since 1968, and he's sharing his perspective with us. E.J.?
Thank you very much, Jim. I was going to once again get back to what I was talking about. Larry McDonald, when he died in the plane wreck, and it was Flight 007, you were correct on that. They kill us off, you know, and one of the interesting things is they use airplanes a lot. We all know JFK Jr. got it. Senator John Hines and John Tower, they were both working against the Rockefellers in Congress, and within a day of each other, you know, they died. And later, John Hines' wife married John Kerry. They were all bonesmen, by the way, skull and bones. What was his name? Mel Carnahan?
Yeah.
That was an amazing. He died in a small plane wreck
couple
of weeks before the election day on
That's
a senatorial race against Ashcroft.
That's right. And the people of Missouri preferred to vote for a dead man than return John Ashcroft to the Senate.
Exactly. He beat him posthumously. I mean, it's like, you know, pretty amazing. House majority.
You might not know, but I and a Native American scholar, Don Fueros Jacobs, authored a book about the death of Senator Paul Wellstone,
who was
also taken out in a plane crash. It's entitled American Assassination, The Strange Death of Senator Paul Wellstone. And I have no doubt in that case that it was an assassination.
Yeah. And this is the way they do it. You know, they, like I was saying, earlier when I mentioned about Hegel, I wanted to be clear about it, that Hegel's crime, he wasn't like a New World Order guy, and he didn't start any of the Skull and Bones at. His crime was that he was complicit in legitimizing or validating the idea that of the state over individual rights. And this is a very important thing, because later on, the New World Order picks this up, and their idea, you know, the goal of them is to establish a world of heavily restricted individual freedom. You know, and they're using this. They're using the fear of that has been put in by the Christian churches. They're using all this, you know, programming that's been going on. So, what I want—I know we were talking during the break. I see if I can wrap it up in this segment for you, so you can go talk more about the politics.
We have some rather sober situations confronting us, alas.
Yes,
DJ, I appreciate it. Go ahead.
I understand, and so. What I wanted to really say is that I want people to understand that life is much, much grander than the lies that have been told to us. It's not as simplistic as everybody says. There are magical things that are happening out there that have no connection at all to religious stuff, no devils, none of that kind of stuff. People are psychic. Crystals do work. Smoke. I'm a medicine man. I studied with Peruvian shamans, Native American shamans, Japanese Buddhist monks, a lot of different people, and I've seen amazing stuff. I saw a woman shapeshift into a wolf during a ceremony one time. I've seen some. We cured a woman of cancer. I didn't even know what it was. I was working with her mother, from about 2,000 miles away, we diminished a tumor that was in her body. I've seen this stuff, and it works. But you have to understand that there's ancient beliefs that are out there, certain truths. And one of them is that our thoughts create our reality. Energy goes where thoughts flow. What did Henry Ford say? Somebody who believes they can do something and somebody who believes they can't, they're both right. You know, so trust the fact that there are bigger stories out there. Don't watch TV. Shut off your TV. Start talking to your neighbors and your friends. And in regards to my 10% solution is simply this. The time for talking is over. We found out enough truth about 9/11. I don't care about, you know, the other day you had on, what's his name, talking about the airplanes into the...
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Into the World Trade Center?
World Trade Center and stuff like that. I don't want to argue about the Verrazano Bridge in the background or anything like that.
Ace Baker.
All I know is that something really bad happened, and it wasn't an accident, and it wasn't terrorists. So my 10% solution is this. 10% of you have to act out there. During the American Revolution, about 7% of the people were actually participating. You know, and 10% of you have to buy guns. You have to buy ammunition. And if they try to pull another false flag event and bring in martial law, 10% of you have to go out there and face them. And it's going to be a horrible thing. Some of us are going to die, but we have to face it. We cannot let them take it down. We're the last strong republic on this planet. And if we go down, the rest of the world is going down too. For about $300, you can get a .22 rifle, 1,000 rounds of ammunition, and a scope. You know, you take a town with 50,000 people, that's around 5,000 adults. You get military planes coming in there, 5,000 people will be shooting at them. And it's not that I want to, you know, take, I love this country, and I'm ex-military myself. But we cannot let this happen. We cannot let the madness of the New World Order take us down. Because if we do, the whole rest of the world is depending on us. We gotta gut it up. That's my idea about the 10% solution.
Well, you know, EJ, I mean, what you're talking about is very related to what I need to discuss here for the rest of the show. And if you want to stay on and offer your comments, I would be very glad for you to do that. I find your point of view extremely interesting, and I'm very pleased to have you on.
My pleasure, and I look forward to perhaps some other time getting on talking with you.
So you want to hang on then while I turn to these other issues, because I'm talking about that it appears that the Republicans are already in the process of stealing this election, and I need to make it real clear what's going on.
Good. That's one of my points, was that that Stalin idea. Remember, what did he say?
Yeah, it doesn't matter who casts the votes. What matters is who counts them.
Counts the votes, exactly. And we know that there's connections all the way up the line to those machines and everybody else. So, yeah, I'll hang in here.
Excellent.
And, love to make a comment or two.
I'm real pleased. That's perfect, EJ. And if there are a couple more words you'd like to add right now before we hit the break, that would be perfect, too.
Yeah, I'd like to send out a big hello to all the people that I emailed and asked to listen to this. And I hope I represented all our past, people like Davis Crowder and Luis Conte and all these other people around the United States. I've done my very best to try to be a good person. I know I've had my weak moments like we all have, but I've done my very best to represent. I told people years ago, I said, the summer of love is over, but I still have its tan. You know what I mean? It wasn't something I went through. You know, I'm still living it. So in that regard, keep the faith and build up a stash of food, too. But don't
just
let
to make the transition, EJ, and we'll come back. See, we'll come back to your 10% solution here at the end, because I think it's very fitting.
Okay.
When Ed Schultz was traveling, Norman Goldman sat in for him.
Uh-huh.
And I sent Norman an email, which he actually read on the show. I'll read it to you now.
Great.
Norman, David Axelrod seems to be on top of voter fraud, but does he understand the threat from the use of electronic voting machines to steal this election? That is what disturbs most of us. It would take millions of instances of voter fraud to change an outcome, but only a few well-positioned hackers to make it happen. What can we do if they steal this election using paperless electronic voting machines? Keep up the great work. Jim. He actually read it on the air, and
Wow.
then as he was beginning to talk about the importance of paper ballots, the station went dead.
How interesting, huh?
Yeah, and it stayed dead for probably 30, 45 seconds. He said it had never happened before. And I say to you, this was no coincidence. Stand by. We'll be right back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, E.J. Doyle. Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, E.J. Doyle, and I have been discussing a variety of issues, and now I'm turning to current developments that our election appears to be being stolen even as we speak. We have had reports from all over the country of electronic voting machines flipping the recorded vote from pressing for a Democrat, pressing for Obama, and having it record for McCain. These are not incidental. This is part of a systematic effort to steal the election using paperless electronic voting machines. It's been a long-term problem. Frankly, I do not know whether the Obama campaign is prepared to cope with it or not. The most promising development thus far is that today the Secretary of State of Colorado impounded one of these machines when it was flipping the vote. Now, impounding the machine means they can be available for forensic study and be used as evidence in courts of law. There are only three or four companies that manufacture these machines. They all have close ties to the Bush administration. and as I shall explain, they appear to have been used especially in 2002 in order to ensure that Max Cleland would be defeated, and in 2004 in Ohio to guarantee that Bush would be reelected. But what's most important, too, to realize is that there's a lot of distraction going on here. John McCain, who has seemed preternaturally cheerful about all of this, appears to be in the know. He has made a major issue of attacking ACORN, which is a community organization that registers voters, as though it were somehow threatening the very fabric of democratic society. My father, who is a student of political science, used to point out to me that the Republicans are very good at campaigning and that they characteristically attack their opponents for the very things of which they are themselves most guilty. They're brilliant at the politics of distraction. So if you start attacking these voter registration groups like ACORN, which are absolutely on the up and up, and which are very self-critical and have been reporting how many times some of their workers, in order to pad their own pockets, have registered Mickey Mouse or the starting lineup for the Chicago Bears or what have you, that these are trivial incidents because it would require millions upon millions of voter frauds for individual voters who would actually go ahead and vote based upon a false registration, which is something that can't take place in the normal course of events anyway, in order to alter an election. So this is a pseudo charge, but it's intended to deflect and redirect attention from election fraud onto voter fraud. Election fraud takes place when you have a systematic way to steal an election, particularly by the use of paperless voting machines. Now, in past elections, statisticians such as Steve Freeman have studied the situation, comparing exit votes with the computer totals. In 2004, for example, you can find some of his studies on a website I maintain. It's assassinationscience.com. There's a big red box entitled The Death of Democracy, and you'll find 6, 8, or 10 studies there, where he discovered that there was anywhere from a 5 to a 15% advantage to the Republicans in those cases when there was no paper trail that could be used to compare, and in all those cases where there was a paper trail to compare, the exit polling corresponded with a tabulated vote. So here is the Republican edge. Everyone knows that there's a massive overwhelming outpouring of support for Barack Obama. I would go through all the latest poll numbers. Practically the only place where John McCain is ahead is in Arizona, and even there he's having to resort to robocalls because the risk to he himself and his own state is great. Everyone knows that we have an Obama, a brilliant, charismatic, highly qualified, objective, presidential temperament kind of guy. He would make a superb president. He also has a background in constitutional law, which he's even taught. He was not only the president of Harvard Law Review, but he's a constitutional scholar. We need to have someone who understands the Constitution. You know, you may recall that George W. Bush was quoted by members of his staff when they pointed out something he was proposing was unconstitutional, that the Constitution is just a goddamn piece of paper. Well, we need to have persons who respect their oath of office, which is to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic, which we manifestly have not had in the case of George W. Bush. He's been corrupting our way of life. He's been violating his own office. He deserves to be impeached on dozens of different grounds. And it's a shame that the spineless Congress has not risen to the occasion. But the Republicans have been very much pursuing the course of rubber stamping everything that this administration wants and defeating the Democrats when they seek to do something constructive on behalf of the American people. Now, I have been on George Norrie's Coast to Coast show. Many of you will know of it. It's an overnight program, runs 4 hours, that reaches 10 to 20 million, 5 different times, 3 times for JFK, once for 9/11, and once for Paul Wellstone. Well, I wrote George Norrie recently the following letter. George, I would be grateful if you could have me on to discuss why I am now convinced that the Bush-Cheney-Rove are going to continue in power by the simple expedient of stealing the election using paperless electronic voting machines, which will precipitate widespread riots and police suppression, justifying Bush in suspending the Constitution and imposing martial law, leading to the continuation in office of Bush-Cheney. The evidence is growing and compelling, including that there is no reason for the police to be beefing up for riots unless they know that the election is going to be stolen and there will be public protests on a massive scale. I would like to come on and discuss all of this and explain why the McCain campaign's focus on redistributing the wealth, a function of all governments in raising revenue through taxation and expending it on behalf of the people, and socialism, as if they were opposed to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and unemployment insurance, where McCain's own proposal to pay off mortgages is itself a massive wealth redistribution plan, and Palin's oil royalty payments to Alaskan citizens is what makes her the most socialistic governor in the nation. But these claims and the characterization of Obama as some kind of terrorist sympathizer is creating a huge number of especially younger citizens willing to attack those who protest the theft of the election by McCain. A very, very volatile mixture, alas, is being created by these efforts. Bring me on, George. Maybe we can do something about it. I sent that to him on the 23rd, and I haven't heard a word in response. Now, there's quite a bit of supporting material out there. I'd like to encourage any of you. I'm going to mention a number of articles. Go to 911scholars.org. And on the blue menu bar at the top, at the far right, it says New Postings. Go to New Postings, click on New Postings at 911scholars.org, and then look for the articles that I'm going to discuss momentarily after the next break, and you'll see how many indications we have before us that this election is being stolen from the American people even as we speak. The situation is disgusting, and it's quite evident to me that John McCain is a part of this measure, and that's why he's attacking Acorn, which is a perfectly reputable public service community organization, and getting new voters registered to distract the American people while their election is being stolen. Jim Fetzer, your host, will be right back with my special guest, E.J. Doyle.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, E.J. Doyle, is standing by while I discuss the situation we're up against, which is extraordinarily serious because the Republicans are stealing the election in spite of the overwhelming support for change. We've got to get rid of these disgusting, corrupt administrations by the Republicans who are benefiting the rich and stealing from the rest of us interminable wars that are calculated to benefit their friends and special buddies, and these giveaways of hundreds of billions of taxpayer dollars to fatten the rich. It's absolutely disgusting. Right now, even on the business page in the New York Times today, there's a question of what's happened to all these $250 billion given to the insurance giant AIG. What's happened to that money? No one seems to know. Now, let me mention some of these articles that substantiate what I'm talking about that you can find on 911scholars.org. Go to the blue menu bar at the top, hit New Postings, scroll down below the events menu, and start looking at for some of the articles I'm going to now summarize. These are from a wide variety of sources, and they all point in the same direction. The Real Scandal, an op-ed piece by Bob Herbert that appeared in the New York Times. The real threat to democracy is the nonstop campaign by the GOP and its supporters to disenfranchise American citizens who have every right to cast a ballot. Rolling Stone, it's already stolen. Investigations by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Greg Palast. According to an investigative report out today in Rolling Stone magazine, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Greg Palast, after a year-long investigation, reveal a systematic program of GOP vote tampering on a massive scale. Next, early voters face intimidation, machine malfunctions. Amy Goodman, Democracy Now! Early voting has begun and problems are already emerging at the polls. In West Virginia, voters using touchscreen machines have claimed their votes were switched from Democrat to Republican. In North Carolina, a group of McCain supporters heckled a group of mostly black supporters of Barack Obama. In Ohio, Republicans are being accused of trying to scare newly registered voters by filing lawsuits that question their eligibility. We speak to NYU professor Mark Crispin Miller, author of Loser Take All Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, on her program Democracy Now! Here's a particularly troubling one. I'm going to return to this one. Police prepare for post-election unrest. Alexander Bolton, The Hill. That's the publication that deals with events around the Capitol. Police departments in cities across the country are beefing up their ranks for Election Day, preparing for possible civil unrest and riots after the historic presidential contest. Public safety officials said in interviews with The Hill that the election, which will end with either the nation's first black president or its first female vice president, demand a stronger police presence. Democratic strategists and advocates for black voters say they understand officers wanting to keep the peace, but caution that excessive police presence could intimidate voters. Well, it's much worse than that. I'll come back to that point. Here's another background issue, of course. Wealth gap creating a social time bomb. John Vidal, The Guardian, UK. Growing inequality in U.S. cities could lead to widespread social unrest and increased mortality, said a new United Nations report on the urban environment. In a survey of 120 major cities, New York was found to be the ninth most unequal in the world, and Atlanta, New Orleans, Washington, and Miami had similar inequality levels to those of Nairobi, Kenya, and the Ivory Coast. Many were above internationally recognized acceptable alert line used to warn governments. The whole business of attacking wealth redistribution on its face is absurd. Progressive income tax gathers resources from the population in order to expend it on behalf of the community. That is wealth redistribution. It's essential to government. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, unemployment insurance, all forms of wealth redistribution. McCain's own plan to pay off the mortgages is a form of wealth redistribution. My God, Sarah Palin up in Alaska takes these royalties from oil companies and sends checks to every member, every citizen of Alaska. That's a massive form of redistribution of wealth. So this whole thing is a complete fraud, and they're playing on the gullibility and stupidity of the American people to play along as though but what they're truly doing is creating a smokescreen that everyone is supposed to have suddenly realized when they walk into the polls that they don't want wealth redistribution. What could be dumber than that? People who don't have wealth can certainly benefit from some redistribution. That's what these stimulus programs are, for God's sake. They're wealth redistribution. They're giving money to poor people or people who are less well endowed financially, so they'll go out and spend it. That's wealth redistribution. What these people believe in, the McCains believe in, this guy has 13 cars and 8 homes, can't even remember how many houses he has. Give money to the rich. Give money to the bankers. Give money to the financiers in nearly $1 trillion. That's wealth redistribution. If you want to call it socialism, it's corporate socialism. It's not benefiting us. Socialism means, in the case of this operation, that the capitalists take all the profits and they socialize the risk and they pass it on to the American people. Now get this. This is in relation to the Wall Street Journal. Extremely disturbing. This is from Michael Green, who is involved with the Election Integrity Group. In a prior post, I underscored that the neocon Wall Street Journal has prepared a narrative for a McCain victory through the effort of such right-wingers as Peggy Noonan and Michael Barone. Barone's was especially important because he's a former professional pollster, and he based his possibility of a last-minute change of mind by voters on a lie, in particular that the 1948 Gallup poll accurately reflected attitudes when taken, but these had changed by the time of the vote. It was a lie because the 1948 Gallup result is famous among pollsters for making the sampling error, polling only those with telephones, who were, of course, wealthier wealthier persons, mostly Republicans, hence falsely predicting a Dewey triumph over Truman. The use of this lie, which he has to know because this is very familiar to all pollsters, suggests a deliberate hidden message that deceit will once again be put into play. Of course, there are many other preparing the narrative for a McCain no more tax pro-war victory, but today's Wall Street Journal has an especially important article entitled, Don't Let the Polls Affect Your Vote. They Were Wrong in 2000 and in 2004, where the author makes a general case for the unreliability of polls. Well, this is absurd, okay? I'm a philosopher of science. I'm familiar with all the methods of scientific reasoning. Polls have become very sophisticated and very accurate. The reason they were wrong in 2000 and in 2004 is because the GOP were manipulating the election to support a predetermined conclusion. They were stealing the election. There's no reason in the world why the exit polls should not be accurate. In fact, in many other countries, such as Germany, for example, the winner is determined on the basis of the exit polls, and the tabulation of the vote formally is merely used as a mode of verification. The exit polls are crucial. Absolutely crucial. Now listen to this. Please prepare for post-election unrest. Police departments in cities across the country are beefing up their ranks for Election Day, preparing for possible civil unrest and riots after the historic presidential contest. Now stop and ask yourself, why are there going to be riots? I mean, just why should they be preparing for riots? There's no good reason whatsoever unless the election is going to be stolen. Public safety officials said in interviews with The Hill that the election, which will end with either the nation's first black president or its first female vice president, demanded a stronger police presence. Some worry that if Barack Obama loses and there's a suspicion of foul play in the election, violence could ensue in cities with large black populations. Others base the need for enhanced patrols on past riots in urban areas following professional sports events and also on internet rumors. Democratic strategists and advocates for black voters say they understand officers wanting to keep the peace, but caution that excessive police presence could intimidate voters. Well, that's not the half of it. Stand by. We'll be right back. This is Jim Vetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with my special guest, E.J. Doyle.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week, concluding a conversation with my special guest, E.J. Doyle, talking about the challenge we confront here as the GOP tries to steal the election right under our noses by distracting our attention, talking about voter fraud when the real issue is election fraud. Election fraud is done with electronic voting machines that will flip the vote from a Democrat to a Republican or whatever they want to have come out, any predetermined conclusion. And voter fraud is almost impossible to pull off. It has a tiny, tiny, tiny incidence of occurrence, because even if you have a false registration, that doesn't mean you're going to be able to go in and vote if, for example, you registered under the name of Mickey Mouse. You think no one would notice? For years, I've been having experts on polling and election rigging on my program. These have included Mark Adams, Steve Freeman, Bob Fitrakis. I've never had Bev Harris on, but I'd love to have her on. You want to go to some of the sites, go to convince yourself what I'm talking about. Don't take my word for it. Look at the evidence. I've mentioned multiple articles you can find on 911scholars.org. Just go to featured articles there in the lower right-hand corner on the blue menu bar at the top, and scroll down and look at some of the articles I've been talking about. Read the one by Bobby Kennedy and Greg Palast. Palst is one of our leading investigative journalists, and Bobby Kennedy's integrity is beyond reproach. We're talking about people who are convinced that the election has already been stolen. So we've been going through this last 20 months. We've been spending untold millions of dollars, all this time and effort for the sake of an exercise in democracy that's futile. If the results that I'm talking about are already predetermined, you have spokesmen for McCain talking about they're planning on a narrow electoral victory strategy. According to Bob Petraeus, they already plan to win the election by 51.3% for McCain, astonishingly, because so many people changed their minds. One way they try to lay a foundation is articles like the one in the Wall Street Journal that tell you that the polls are undependable. Another is by having phony polls of their own that give a false result. Thus, you have McCain's pollster claiming that, according to him, it's tightening up, and it's now, you know, neck and neck and within the margin of error of the polls. And McCain himself is repeating this. He knows it's false. It's ridiculous. All the signs, all the pollsters, all the editorials, everyone who goes anywhere is voting for Obama. We're sick of it. We're sick of it. We're sick of it. We must get back to constitutional government. We must restore some integrity to our way of doing business. They attack the tax and spend Democrats, but you have to raise taxes if you're going to pay for. You can't do it on borrow and spend. That's what got us in this mess to begin with. George W. Bush has doubled the national debt from about $5 trillion to about $10 trillion. Can you believe that? In only 8 years, and he's made a mess of the standing of the United States in the eyes of the world. He's been destroying our military. There are three key pillars of national security. One is financial integrity. Well, that is completely destroyed. Number two is military strength. Well, we have been butchering our forces, abusing them with these constant rotations, stop-loss, everything else. All the generals and commanders of the National Guard and the Army and the Marine Corps say this is unsustainable. And in the third place, it's our moral standing in the world. If there was ever anything that kept us secure from a terrorist attacks in the world, it's because everyone thought we were the benevolent big brother. We were benefiting the world. We weren't what we're now perceived as being, the biggest bully on the block. We'll just take whatever they want. And Bush is making matters worse. He's continuing not only to violate international law and the UN Charter by these interventions in Afghanistan and in Iraq, but now he's violating the borders, the national sovereignty of Syria on the one hand and of Pakistan on the other, with an extension of the so-called Bush Doctrine, which Governor Palin had no idea even existed, which says the United States has the right to attack any country that it thinks might at some point in time pose a threat to us. This is called preventative war. It's forbidden by international law and the United Nations Charter. It's not the same thing as a preemptive attack, which you can do if you think you are about to be assaulted. Now, Bob Petraeus is particularly good at analyzing what's been going on. He has published 13 books, won 13 awards for investigative journalists, ran as for governor of Ohio. He has an extensive study of what happened in Ohio. It's been complemented by a new book by a fellow, Richard Hayes Phillips, whom I've also had on a guest, Witness to a Crime, who's just compiled the massive number of ways in which they've been stealing the election. But what Bob pointed out to me is Republicans found this guru, this kind of electronic genius named Mike Connell, and that George Herbert Walker Bush actually brought Connell behind the firewall that protects Congress, so that Connell's had access to the Ethics Committee and the House Judiciary Committee and all that. So he's been able to break into files and find out everything that the Republicans would want to know, so that they can, I suspect, blackmail members of Congress whenever they want, because they have access to all this information. Bob Petraeus has laid out very clearly how they're going to have all the votes around the country are going to be sent to a central tabulator in Tennessee, and it's going to be processed there, where they're going to manipulate the outcome so that it will be changed. They tend to do this late in the morning. So it happens like between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m., suddenly there's a dramatic change in the vote totals. Well, let me tell you, statisticians know that there there aren't dramatic changes in voters' attitudes when they walk into the voting booth. It was simply well illustrated in the case of Max Cleland down in Georgia. Cleland was widely admired. He was a hero of Vietnam War. He lost three limbs, for God's sake. Down there, they tend to elect their senators and their governors for long periods of time. But in this case, they used electronic voting machines, and there was a stunning 17% change in the vote between the day before the election and the election. Well, I'll just tell you, the only way that can happen is by stealing the election using electronic voting machines. The situation is terribly, terribly serious. And I tell you, you must let people know, let your congressmen know, let anyone associated with the Brock campaign, tell them you're concerned about the theft of the election using electronic voting machines. Now, my guest today, E.J. Doyle, has talked about his 10% solution. Let me just say, there are modern weapons today that can disintegrate human beings. They'll take a bus full of people and they'll reduce it like a wet rag, and the bodies wind up about the size of a little fetus. I believe these are directed energy weapons, and they seem to have something to do with it, getting rid of all the water content of anything. One of the fascinating aspects of 9/11 is that in New York, we have the destruction of these 210-story buildings, the concrete, the steel, the office furniture, human beings and other living things were all turned to very fine dust except for paper. There was tons of paper all over the city. And the reason appears to be is that paper has no water content. This is an astonishing situation, no water content. But you and I have tremendous water content. And if the water, when it expands, when it goes from liquid to steam, expands to the tune of about 1,600 times the volume when it's steam rather than liquid. So you can imagine the explosive potential here if you have some kind of sophisticated weapon. Now, the point I'm making is that the military has these weapons. We aren't told about them. They're using them off and on in Iraq. They've been testing them. A Russian general said the principal reason we were going into Iraq was to test all these kinds of high-tech weapons and all that, so that the companies could demonstrate to the Pentagon that they really work, because the Pentagon tends not to give its contracts. Remember now, what can we do then in the face of overwhelming military power? I think Gandhi had the right idea. Passive resistance. If this election is stolen, as much as we can, don't shop, don't go out, don't drive, don't buy gas, don't go anywhere. Stay at home as much as you can. Make only those efforts or expenditures that you have to bring this economy down, bring the nation to a standstill until they restore the true result of the election. I can see no other alternative that actually works. I'm very fond of E.J. Doyle, but I think that this is the right way to go. And E.J., I want to give you an opportunity here to squeeze a couple words in edgewise before the end of this program.
Well, my intent was not to say to go to war with our military, because I know they have superior weapons. I've seen that. What I'm saying is that it's been done before. In 2000, the election was stolen. 175,000 Florida ballots never got counted. Later on, then National Opinion Research Center checked it out and said Al Gore actually won. But conveniently, September 11th happened.
I'm so glad to have you on. I look forward to having you back. Everyone, check it out. Check out Bob Petraeus. Check out voter fraud. Check out the election fraud versus voter fraud, okay? Pay attention to what's going on. This is your country. They're stealing it from you.
That's for sure.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Thank you all for listening.